Hello, welcome to this week's Boxing News podcast, The Opening Bell. I'm editor Tris Dixon, joined by John Dennen. John, how's it going?
Pretty good, all going well.
So, back from Macau last week, where you were keeping some pretty ungodly hours, was it worth it? And what was the highlight of the trip?
It was brilliant. It was a bit disorientating because everything was, you were sort of on Macau time, everything's being done for American TV, so you find, you know, the fight started in the early in the morning, the weigh-in was early in the morning, press conferences can be late at night, so it was all a bit disorientating, but it was fantastic.
It is odd going to a weigh-in in the morning, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, and I wasn't expecting sort of 13,000 people to be in an arena at sort of 8, 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Because they all turned out for the undercard as well, which you don't usually get. Highlights, there were lots of highlights, but two afternoons I could just go to a gym in the hotel and watch Pacquiao training, which was, you know, I don't think, you don't often get that really, you don't get that opportunity to just sort of sit and watch him on the, you know, on the pads with Freddie Roach, you know, and he trained hard, like even in fight week, right up to the day before the weigh, and he was meant to be having a light session, which, you know, he was there for hours.
Was he having problems at the weight?
He looked like he made the weight easily. I think he was just, because he wasn't really, I just think he really, you know, I think he was motivated. He did really want to knock out Algieri. It just looked like he was back in business.
Okay, cool. Did you think he was back in business on the night?
I did actually, even though he didn't finish him off. Algieri did run so much and he did go over so easily. I just wonder if he'd held his ground a little bit more and hadn't gone down so easily, whether that would give him Pacquiao a better chance to finish him off. And he nearly had him out of there in the ninth round.
Oh, you mean Algieri nearly had Pacquiao out while he was in the cage?
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, he stayed in the cage for too long.
Just that split second too long. So it was a long, exhausting trip. You were in Korea as well. Tell me a little bit about that.
That was great. So I caught the end of the Women's World Championships out on Jeju Island in Korea. Saw Katie Taylor sort of making history again, 5 consecutive world titles, which is pretty remarkable. And she's big news over in Ireland. Quite a few Irish journos have made the trip out to Korea for that tournament. GB did quite well, even without Nicola Adams, the sort of her understudy Lisa Whiteside actually got all the way to the final, which is a pretty encouraging sign for strength and depth on the amateur scene.
Okay, good stuff. And just with regards to Macau and the Pacquiao show, what else caught your eye on the bill?
I was, you know, Lomachenko is a seriously class act. He hurt his left hand fairly early on and just hammered his opponent with his right. Zhu Xiuming, who I had down as, even though he's really popular in China, I thought he's old, he's kind of boring, he was lucky to win his second Olympic medal, but he was actually in a really exciting fight. You know, he really sort of went for it, showed some power, showed he could scrap a bit. So that was sort of one of the highlights of the undercard as well.
DeMarco Vargas, did you like it?
I did. I haven't been, yeah, it turned out to be a good scrap. Jesse Vargas hasn't really set the world on fire for me. So they were sort of talking him up as a potential Pacquiao opponent, which doesn't thrill me.
You think if he was to fight Pacquiao would get his first stoppage since 2009?
I'd probably go for that, yeah. But you know, Vargas seems to be quite tough. But I'd go for that.
So you've seen Pacquiao now up close. If he doesn't get the Mayweather fight, who would you put him in with? Which two opponents would you put him in with next year?
If he doesn't get the Mayweather fight, because I've been thinking about the Mayweather fight so much, I haven't been thinking about anything else.
What, for 5 years?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Who would? Because he's running out of people, so he's talking about going down to light welterweight. I suppose Danny Garcia is the obvious fight there. That's a pretty good fight. Golden Boy and Top Rank can work together. Who else? I wouldn't mind seeing Pacquiao and Amir Khan.
Pacquiao Broner?
Yeah, that would be fun. I wouldn't argue with it. But what's Broner really done to get back, you know, to merit, you know, to get back to the big time?
Don't you follow his Instagram?
I don't actually, and probably all the better for not doing that.
Yeah, probably for the best. Pacquiao, how much has he declined in the last 2 or 3 years?
He's not the sort of wrecking machine he was when he was tearing his way through the weights and the way he beat Miguel Cotto. So he has significantly declined, but not stopping someone for 5 years, I think, is a sign of that. But he's still right up there at the top of the sport. He's just not as good as he was. And intriguingly, I think Mayweather has declined as well. They might have sort of declined in parallel, so I think it might still be a good fight.
That was my next question. If they were to fight next year, who do you think's got the most left? And who would win?
I think you'd probably have to favour Mayweather's skills to sort of pick him off in our boxing, but I think it's a live fight. You go Mayweather, but still a fight that would merit the hype it, the hype it's getting, even though it hasn't been made.
Okay, good stuff. We had a big weekend of action last week. A lot of discussion has been centred around the big XL bill, where Billy Joe Saunders came through a spirited effort from Chris Eubank Jr. and Tyson Fury, again defeated Derek Chisora. Let's start with what was the nominal main event, I suppose, in Fury Chisora. And Chisora, long way back now, because he got stopped in the 10th round, known for his durability and for being a tough guy, but he was busted up and broken down really by Fury. So what happens next for Derek Chisora?
I don't know. I think, when they brought him back, sort of before, they were having him fight regularly, that sort of regular activity seems to be good for him, because he was out for ages, waiting for this Fury fight, and sort of the inactivity seems like doesn't work well for him. So I guess he's got to fight regularly. He's going to have to be against journeyman types. I'm just not sure, where does he go from here? Will he get back to British title level by the time Fury vacates it to move on to world level? Then what will he happen? Will he
have the hunger to do that?
Yeah, but, I mean, probably. What else is he going to do?
Sell cars and property. That's what he does, isn't
he? Oh, does he?
Yeah.
All right.
So there you go. That's what you do.
Yeah. Well, boxers, they never quit, do they? They always come back.
Yeah. Often that's the case.
Could you see him fighting someone like Anthony Joshua down the line for a British title?
I think that's a really good fight for Joshua to take if they can make it. Obviously, there's differences between their promoters, so I'm not sure how they can ever resolve that, but I think it's a logical fight for Joshua now. It looked like on Saturday night, if you're going by Saturday night alone, that the sting's been taken out of Derek Chisora. I think style-wise, he's a good match. He's durable, so Joshua will get rounds, and he's tough, so he'll keep coming as well. So I think it's a good match, but Chisora has had a succession of very, very hard fights. I know you talked about him coming back against Journeyman, but there was a run there where he was fighting the Heleniuses, the Klitschkos, Hay and several others in a row. So he's got some mileage now, yeah. Chisora. He's been fighting decent fights since he was about 12 or 15 fights into his career, when he was matched with an unbeaten Sam Sexton early on as well. So he's had, so the mileage is there, so it might be the time's right for Joshua. We spoke to Joshua yesterday, didn't we? He said he fancied his chances against Chisora and Fury. How would you see a fight with Fury and Chisora going? Fury and Joshua going.
I think even now he's sort of, obviously Joshua's got a lot more that he needs to show as a professional, but I think you'd favour him, or certainly I'd pick him over Fury. I think he's got that power. Fury's open to shots. So I think now, I'd probably pick Joshua over Fury, even though Fury's so much more experienced as a pro.
Fury just beat a guy who's been on the fringes of the world class at a canter, and he did it left-handed, and you think Joshua beats him?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
But, I'm not saying a big, but I mean, what do you reckon?
I'd say it's a big gamble, particularly because, Joshua, where people talk about his size and strength, he's fighting a guy that he instantly gives those advantages away to, maybe not strength, but certainly size and dimensions. So then he'd be relying on other attributes and experiences, and one of the things that he's going to be bringing to the table against Fury. So interesting. I mean, it's one of the, you'd have to pick, it's you know, it's not too dissimilar to thinking about it, the Saunders-Eubank match. It's almost a bit of a heavyweight one of those. You know, Fury's now the European champion. Saunders was European champion. Joshua hasn't really fought anyone above domestic class. You know, because Bakhtov was very much on the downside of his career, and that's the best win of his career. And Eubank obviously hadn't ventured out of there. So, you know, I can see parallels between that. Obviously, there'd be a massive amount of interest in it. I think it's too early to be built as an event. You know, I think a year from now, if they can be built as separate brands, it could be huge, particularly if there's a portion of the heavyweight title in the on the line. What's interesting for me is that Fury's now supposedly the mandatory challenger for the WBO title, but for the life of me, I just can't see him and Klitschko ever fighting. Can you?
Yeah, no, I don't think Klitschko has expressed much interest. I think Klitschko's, he's going to be focused on unifying all the titles. So it sounds like Klitschko wants to fight in the States maybe early next year and then try and get Stiverne for the WBC title. So even if Fury's is mandatory, the unification will trump there. So you could see Fury stuck for the whole of 2015 waiting for a Klitschko fight that doesn't materialise.
Yeah, it's just as well he started young, wasn't it, Fury? Because he spent a long time waiting around the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously you mentioned Stiverne. Stiverne's fighting Wilder, so it would be the winner of that Vladimir will have his eye on. There's talks of Vladimir fighting Jennings maybe in March next year, which isn't a bad fight as far as keeping busy fighters go. You know, certainly a few steps up from Alex Leopold and a couple of others that you could mention.
That's for sure. Jennings doesn't stand much of a chance, does he?
I wouldn't have thought so, but then who does against Vladimir at the moment? You know, Vladimir's looking quite imperious, certainly when you see who's out there. But Fury, I mean, if you're faced with a choice of having to wait a year for Vladimir, who do you get for Fury? How do you keep him motivated? How do you keep him interested? And how do you keep him near the top of the rankings without getting him bumped off?
Yeah. It's a good question. Who else is out there that would sort of be an interesting fight? Because presumably Fury's going to fight early next year, but presumably that'll be against an easy.
They're talking about that February show in the O2 that Warren will be promoting. So he'll be out. He'll be out then. But yeah, I mean, it's just interesting because you can't risk that mandatory ranking. You know, against a real danger man. So it could be that he just has a very frustrating 2015 again.
Yeah, but then maybe that might make Fury Joshua sort of appealing from the Fury side. If they do that at the end of 2015, I think that's a huge fight.
I mean, people will be on the lookout for big fights, won't they? You know, there's some money to be made for everyone in the heavyweight division, I'm sure. So you look at people like David Price, where it's not the fight it was a couple of years ago when there was talks that there was talks about Price Fury perhaps fighting in Liverpool at Anfield. You know, obviously it wouldn't be like that, but you could see that maybe doing the Manchester Arena or something like that.
Yeah, still
or
be,
even the O2. It would
still
be a big event.
Fight, yeah.
Yeah, particularly if you have a couple of strong fights on the undercard. So there's different fights, but then it's like I said, it's the risk, you know.
Because Price would be quite dangerous, even though, you know, Fury's at the moment.
You'd have to factor that Price possibly is one of the hardest five heavyweight hitters in the world still. But, you know, you'd have Wilder and Klitschko ahead of him, but in terms of right hand power, there's not many ahead of Big David Price. So it's a risky fight. But also on the XL bill, Bradley Skeet came close to defeating Frankie Gavin, fell just short. A few people had Skeet up in the end. The general consensus was that Gavin had just nicked it. Gavin turned pro with such promise, having won the World Amateur Championships, hasn't gone on to fulfil all his wild potential, has he?
No. He's sort of, like, Skeet did do better than expected. But Gavin, you just feel like he's got the skills, you just feel that there needs to be more to complete the package, whether it was, you know, Skeet did look a lot bigger than him and than Gavin in the ring, so I think always that suspicion that Gavin should be in the division below, that's going to continue to haunt Frankie. You know, he just doesn't look as physically strong as, you know, the people like Lennon Bundu and that kind of stuff. So I think there are areas of his game that he needs to improve to fulfill his potential. But
do you think it's too late to do that now?
I don't. But then maybe that's just me being a Frankie Gavin fan or being an optimist.
Also on the bill, Liam Walsh defeated Gary Sykes. Sykes got off to a terrible start where he was downed in the first round and in real trouble. He did well not just to see out the round but to last the course of the fight. He was well adrift on the scorecards in the end, but he started so badly. Well, obviously he was knocked out by Gary Buckland in a round, wasn't he, in prize fighter. So he's been caught cold again by Walsh. Walsh definitely has some pedigree, but it's a shame for Sykes, really, because that looked like possibly stealing the show, didn't it? And yet for Sykes to get off to such a bad start, it didn't really turn into the two-sided war it could have been, didn't it?
Yeah. Sort of good result for Liam Walsh. Kind of a shame for Gary Sykes that it wasn't the sort of the cracking fight we hoped it would be. It's interesting. I'm not sure where does Liam Walsh go from here? What next?
Well, I think it would be good to see him kept busy. I'd like to see him have, you know, three, maybe four fights next year. But there's some, you know, some good fights out there for Liam Walsh, and he sort of kept his end of the bargain by beating some really decent people over the last sort of 12 or 18 months. Just like to see him a little bit more active. With regards to Saunders Eubank, good fight. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was a really good fight, actually. Yeah.
The first six rounds, obviously, Saunders was in control, wasn't he? Sort of using his jab. He marked up Eubank around the left cheek and was sort of, you know, dictating things without really taking control. But then Eubank started to gamble a little bit more, became a little bit emboldened. With the more success he had, the more he tried. And then he fell just short in the end. He said, I think on Twitter, that he felt he just nicked it or that he'd won it, but two of the judges disagreed. A hefty minority of people disagreed with what Eubank said. The majority think Saunders had done enough in the first half of the fight and then taken a couple in the second half of the fight to win the decision. But what did you learn from the fight, and who came out of it with the most credit?
You know, I tend to think Eubank Jr. comes out with the most credit because he was going straight, you know, he's young, inexperienced, going straight into European level. And actually, when he kind of acclimatized to it in the second half of the fight, he came on strong. You know, what he was doing wasn't that complicated. It was just using his size, physicality to go forward and throw big shots. But it's sort of like someone with the skills of Billy Joe should have been able to deal with that. So I think that leaves Saunders with things to work on, and Eubank Jr. with quite a bright future. And, you know, now he's got a bit more experience. He can refine his technique a little bit, not be quite so wild.
So do you think Eubank needs to step down in class and learn that, or do you think now he's sort of, this is a big education for him and he's ready to sort of stay at the British European level that he appears he might be at now?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him stay in sort of interesting British level fights, whether that's against, you know, Nick Blackwell or John Ryder or people like that, rather than going back to, you know, hammering journeymen admittedly, the way he goes about attacking journeymen, he's quite entertaining. He's pretty crazy in the ring, so he's going to be good to watch for a few years. Yeah.
What would happen if he fought John Ryder?
I think it would be a good fight. I think Ryder would be physically strong enough to deal with Eubank's strength, and then Ryder's got, you know, probably slightly classier boxer, so I'd go for Ryder to win a good fight.
Really? Okay. Brave pick.
Is it?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, it's a good fight, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
good fight.
Exactly.
Good fight. You spoke to Ryder about it yesterday. What did he say?
Well, he's actually more interested in, rather than sort of going to British level, or sorry, rather than sort of pursuing the British title, he's got this WBO, whatever it is, intercontinental belt that gives him a ranking with the WBO. So he wants to sort of push on to a high level, whether that's getting himself in the mix to challenge for the WBO title. So that could be, you know, maybe the winner of Andy Lee, Matt Korobov, or the winner of that fight versus Billy Joe Saunders. I think Ryder wants to get himself in the mix for that title, which would take him away from a fight with the likes of Eubank for the British title. That's what he wants to do. Obviously, I'd like him to fight Eubank Jr.
What do you think Billy Joe should do now? What would you do? Say you were promoting Billy Joe. What would you do next? Because it's a big jump from, you know, whether or not Eubank's European class or not, he's obviously given Billy Joe a good fight. But ultimately, if you're promoting Billy Joe, you know you've just beaten a guy who's had 10 fights or so at English level, or 15 fights at English level, and he's taken a big step up. And then if you're going with Billy Joe and you're fighting the winner of Matt Korobov, Andy Lee, isn't that almost a similarly big jump? Or do you think Billy Joe's pedigree from previous fights against the likes of Jared Fletcher is enough to give you cause to believe that he can make that step?
I mean, it is a big jump, but Billy Joe is a European level fighter at the moment, and you know, I think in an ideal world he could probably do with a little bit more time to prepare for a world title fight with someone like Korobov or Andy Lee if he wins. But you don't really want to let a shot at a world title slip away from you. So I think he probably has to go for it as soon as he can get it, because, you know, if Korobov beats Andy Lee, he can want a unification fight with, you know, a big unification fight with Golovkin on HBO, and then that title shot would just drift away from Billy Joe. So I think it, you know, in reality, he's going to have to go for it as soon as he can.
Did Saunders Eubank prove to you that Eubank Jr. isn't quite ready for Gennady Golovkin?
But
as Chris Eubank Jr. had said,
arguably he is not yet quite ready for Gennady Golovkin, but you know, but I'd pay to see the fight.
Why? What would you like to see out of that fight?
Eubank would get brutally knocked out. Well,
no, I think
I don't think he's on Golovkin's radar just yet.
No, I think obviously
Andre Ward though.
All the talk with Chris Eubank Senior talking about his son being the best fighter in the world from middleweight up to light heavyweight, I think it's proved to be null and void to an extent. It's now down to Chris Jr. to rebound. I don't know, there was plenty about him on Saturday that impressed me. I spoke to Ricky Hatton about it yesterday, actually. I said he could be one of those, and it's a bit crude to say it because you know he's been around the block and he does have some decent fundamentals, but when he learns to fight, it'll be dangerous. You know, he needs to learn, or he needs to employ a lot of the basics. Yeah. Far more than he did, like all those wild attacks. You know, some of them he was made to look almost Naz-like. He was so ungainly the way he was sort of swooping in with heavy hooks and uppercuts, and missing by a mile. He wasn't setting anything up behind the jab or trying to find reasonable range by stepping in or stepping out. It just seemed to sort of, he was buying a lottery ticket after a lottery ticket. And as Billy Joe slowed down, some of them were cashing in.
It was
an interesting fight all the way. Certainly, I wouldn't have a problem seeing that again though down the line.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. So yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. He sort of got by on strength, toughness actually, because you know he walked through quite a few shots. But if throw a little bit of boxing into that mix, then you become good.
If Billy Joe managed to keep doing what he'd been doing in the first six rounds, would we be saying that was a great performance by Billy Joe Saunders, or would we say, well, Eubank just wasn't all he was cracked up to be in the first place?
I think we probably would. We would probably be saying, oh, you just sort of picked off and outboxed an inexperienced fighter. He'll learn and come again.
Yeah. So proved not to be the case on the night.
What do you think of people saying that Eubank Senior should take a step back?
I think that's interesting. I think I've got a lot of respect for Chris Eubank Sr. And I think he does have a role in the team. I wouldn't have him as the voice, or certainly the lead voice in the corner. But there needs to be some direction, there needs to be some strategy. Whether it was bluster or not, when Chris Eubank Jr. said he didn't need a game plan going into the fight, he'll figure it out when he's in there. Well, it took him six rounds to figure it out and basically lost the fight by then. So you need someone with a strategy and a plan ahead of time so you don't fall behind and you can't overturn the deficit. So I think there's a place for Eubank Sr. I don't think that place is in the ring. It might not even be in the corner. But I believe he does know what buttons to press. I believe his influence and his presence gives Chris Jr. confidence, which is a good thing. I think Chris is confident anyway, but I think his dad's presence gives him something to... I think he thrives off his dad's presence. But you'd like a commanding voice in the corner, and one that's listened to. Obviously, Ronnie Davis might have been given the right instructions. He might have had the right tactics, but ultimately someone's got to take those tactics on board and not be told to stop talking. I definitely like to see some sort of changes. I'm not even sure the changes need to be in personnel, but the way that things are working at the moment needs to change, I'd say, for sure.
Well, Miz, the father and son double act is such a great sort of attention-grabbing thing.
Well, yeah, maybe, yeah, you know,
even
maybe
if it annoys everyone, it's maybe it's someone talking.
Exactly, maybe it's the journalist in me that still wants to see them together. Yeah. You know, it's part of the package, part of the story, isn't it? And you know, obviously, it would be boring if the sport was the same, and it'd be very mundane if everyone was the same. And to have the Eubanks together on the landscape, it makes the horizon a little bit brighter, somewhat, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Colourful, I think, is the word. Elsewhere this week, by the way, Danny Flexen was ringside for the report there that's in this week's Boxing News. We also had Daniel Herbert over. Over in Omaha, where he watched a Ray Beltran, he saw Ray Beltran outgunned by Terence Crawford, who delivered seemingly another masterclass. Crawford's starting to look a little bit unstoppable, but it'll be interesting as he moves up in weight to see how he copes with the likes of Danny Garcia and maybe the Manny Pacquiao down the line.
Yeah. I mean, he'd be a great opponent for Pacquiao, but because I mean, at lightweight, he's a class act, isn't he?
I mean, you can't. There's very few chinks to Crawford's armor, really, is there? I mean, he sort of ticks all the boxes. He's got decent power. He's got a fast hands, good movement. Can box southpaw or orthodox. He's obviously travelled away from home and defeated Ricky Burns, so he's not fazed about where he is, but he's turned Omaha into something of a fortress, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got amazing support in Omaha. Because I was at the Burns fight when Crawford won the title, and he didn't come over with any great support. I think there was a small group of maybe friends and family or something, so he was there, you know, pretty much, you know, no support in the Scottish crowd. So I wasn't expecting then to see his first defence, this huge event in Omaha, and he's kept it up this time around, I think, with an even bigger gate for the second defence. So he's sort of got it all going for him. Having said that, I know he's very good. He's not the most exciting fighter in the world to watch in the ring.
Well, there's a bit of an Andre Ward about it, isn't there? I think it's going to take someone to push him to bring the best out of him. And I mean, credit where it's due. The Gamboa fight was a bit of a shootout in points, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, but then Gamboa, you know, you're going somewhere if you look dull against Gamboa anyway. Crawford starting to look imperious. Be interesting to see how he gets on when he moves up in weight for sure. This weekend, I actually think there's going to be a possible fight of the year contender in New York when David Lemieux fights Gabe Rosado at middleweight. Spoke to Matthew Macklin the other day. He's tipping Rosado, the underdog, to win. Rosado's a tough nut, and Lemieux's very dangerous early on, 30 knockouts from 32 wins. Which side of the coin are you coming down on?
You know, I was originally going to pick Lemieux, but Macklin's convinced me to go to Rosado. Just because, I mean, Lemieux's a dangerous power puncher, but I think he can, you know, I'm just not sure. you know, if he doesn't get Rosado out of there early, Rosado, you know, he's not a pushover, Rosado, is he?
No, so it's a really good match. I mean, it says something when you can compare it to Gatti Ward, as I did on Twitter, and no one really kicked off about it. There's something about that in terms of, and I think what I'm talking about is their levels. They're both fairly straightforward guys. You know what you're going to get out of them. And they're both going to meet head on in the Brooklyn Center. I think it's going to be, I think it'll be a crazy fight while it lasts.
Yeah,
definitely do. Yeah. And also on that undercard, Thomas DeLorme's fighting Hank Lundy. But John, obviously, I think you've been to more shows than most this year. What've been, take Macau out of the equation, what's been the high points of your time ringside this year?
Macau was probably the best thing I've ever done, but accepting that, there's some good ones.
I still haven't seen your Macau expenses, actually. I'm sure there'll be some very controversial things on there.
No comment. I've been at some good ones. Obviously, I was at Frotch Groves with you. That was an incredible event. In terms of the fights themselves. In terms of the fights themselves, I was at the crazy Tommy Coyle fight where him and his Argentine.
Brizuela.
Yeah, Brizuela, where they knocked each other down four or five times apiece. That was entertaining. First Buckland Reese fight was a pretty good fight. Crawler, John Murray.
In Manchester, yeah, the Battle of Manchester, yeah.
Was a good fight, good atmosphere. There'd been a lot. I suppose I'd have to go Coyle Brizuela because that was mental.
Yeah. And in Hull, which is, you know, we talk about Omaha becoming a bit of a fortress. Could be big things for Hull fight fans next year, couldn't there?
Yeah, definitely. Like, Coyle and Luke Campbell are on their collision course, and that's going to be really popular in Hull. I think I assume that will be a stadium fight, and I assume they're just waiting until the summer to do it, because then, you know, the weather will be good enough, well, as good as the weather in Hull gets to have an outdoor fight. And so in the meantime, they'll both be fighting in Hull, and they draw, it's interesting, they really draw a bit, you know, a good crowd, a really loud crowd, and it just shows, you know, in certain towns really, or cities really latch on to their boxers, sort of like we've seen Josh Warrington in Leeds. Actually, I was at Warrington, Lindsay, I think, when he won the British title, and it was like a Wednesday night in Leeds, and I just wasn't expecting this wild crowd to be making so much noise.
It was bonkers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, low points of the year?
Low points. There have been so many, it's hard to
Where do you begin?
What was the worst? I found the heavyweight prize fighter with a washed up James Toney and a bunch of, you know, a motley crew beating each other up was just kind of draining to watch. That was probably the lowest quality I've seen. Sometimes when it's 1 a.m. and the show's stretching on interminably and you've had the main event and some poor prospect is trying to win his four rounder while people are dismantling the arena around him and no one's watching other than
TV cameras being switched off and lights going out and everything else.
Well, one show in Liverpool, as in the cold air was blowing in because they'd opened up the wall so they could dismantle the whole TV set equipment, and then these poor guys still fighting with like a freezing wind blowing in. That was sort of a low moment, but
for you or them or both?
For everyone
gets his own. Yeah. Okay. So, obviously we're nearing Christmas. What would be your Christmas wish for boxing next year?
It's got to be Mayweather Pacquiao. I know we say that kind of, we've been talking about it for so many years, but just the way they were going on about it, I wasn't interested in it before I got out to Macau. It wasn't something I was expecting to, you know, it wasn't something that was on my mind, but the way sort of Bob Arum was talking, Pacquiao, you know, calling Mayweather out after the fight, they really sort of put it back on the agenda. So, okay, so Top Rank have got in my head. Now I want to see Pacquiao Mayweather.
You've bought into the publicity.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. But
what's the percentage like chance of it happening? Well, let's finish on this. What's the percentage chance of it happening?
Oh God, I don't know. 30%
chance it happens.
Yeah, because I think it all depends on Mayweather, doesn't it? Like, no one can really. Maybe it just depends on Mayweather and Al Haymon, and like, no one can really dictate turn. No one can really tell Mayweather what to do. He does what he wants to do.
Well, I think the interesting thing is obviously Floyd. It's no secret that he likes money. And if you think about the money he can make from everybody else, and you look at pay-per-view buys, providing Cotto fights Canelo, and I know there's talks that, that there's been speculation that Cotto could be back in the frame for a Mayweather rematch, but providing Cotto fights Canelo, and that those two are out of the Mayweather equation, I'm not convinced there's another fighter around that Mayweather will do 1 million pay-per-views with.
Yeah,
I think, you know, he'll be struggling to get sort of 750,000 pay-per-views in the US against anybody, aside from if he fights someone like Golovkin, which you know is not going to happen. So is he going to take sort of a 750,000 buys for someone like a Khan or Alexander if he wins, or someone like that, or a Bradley, or is he going to try and get 3 million pay-per-views against Manny Pacquiao? So does he really want like a paycheck of 30 million, or is he going to go for that, what's being called a $1 billion fight? You know, and if it does come down to hard economics, then really there's only one fight on the table.
Yeah, but then if you factor in risk, you know, sort of the risk of reward equation, obviously I think you'd probably favour Mayweather to beat Pacquiao, but if you can earn pretty good money against fighters who are nowhere near as dangerous as Pacquiao. You know, he managed to fight Maidana twice in 1 year. I think that being unbeaten is so, that's what all his legacy sort of depends on, really. So I think mentally, actually, there's going to be a huge amount of pressure on Mayweather going into the Pacquiao fight, because he'll be sort of contemplating losing.
So do you think legacy means more to him than money? Or do you think ego means more to him than both of those?
I don't know. I don't know.
We've gone too deep.
This is too far into the mind of Floyd Mayweather. You're going to have to tell me. I'd go like money. It all come. Everything comes down to money in the end. Not for me, for Floyd Mayweather.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe the money will win out in the end, but maybe the money would still be there in 2016, in 2017. We're on 2015.
Okay.
All right. You tell me. What's going to happen?
Do you know what? I've been guessing about this fight for 5 years, haven't I? I think I remember I was ringside at De La Hoya Pacquiao when Pacquiao sort of stormed the Golden Boy Fortress and smashed him to bits. And then I called for the Hatton fight, thinking that would be the best fight for Pacquiao. An entertaining fight, £140. And after that fight, when he wiped out Hatton, any time after that would have been the right time for the Mayweather fight, certainly with them at their primes. Ironically now, I think with Pacquiao looking quite decent against Algieri, that devastating loss to Marquez, possibly almost erased from his memory, and with how Floyd has looked against Maidana both times, I'd probably say Pacquiao now has probably got more chance against Mayweather than Pacquiao at any time in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be something that Floyd will want to hear from anybody around him. But then you keep hearing rumours of another shake-up in the team, so who's going to be telling him what, you don't know. And ultimately, will it just come down to money? They obviously say money talks. But at the same time, no one makes Floyd Mayweather do anything that he doesn't want to do. And if he doesn't want to do anything, and he doesn't need to do it, and don't get me wrong, he doesn't think he has to fight Pacquiao. You know, everyone's saying, oh, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. To Floyd Mayweather, it doesn't matter if he retires and he's only got four Hall of Fame fighters on his record. He doesn't mind. You know, he sees his position as very solid in history, and it is to an extent, nowhere near as solid or high up as he thinks it is. But he's done his he's left his legacy. He's done a lot for the sport in positive ways as well as negative. He's definitely brought a new generation of fight fans to the game when you think of 24/7 and the shows that are being created around him and his persona. But no one's going to tell him that he has to fight Manny Pacquiao. No one, you know, not even Al Heyman. No one around him is going to sit him down and say, this is your one option. You know, they'll present different cases to him and say, you can have this guy, or this guy. And he will choose what's best for Floyd Mayweather. And ultimately, if he does turn around and fight fight Manny Pacquiao, he'll probably turn around and say, I'm doing this for the fans. And, you know, you'll know exactly why he's done it. It would be several million reasons why he's done it, many million reasons yeah. why he's done it. And the fans will be paying for it, that's for sure. So still, on that happy financial note, I'll leave you to your Christmas stocking and your lump of coal at the bottom of your payslip.
Got that to look forward to.
Yeah, might be a Satsuma in it this year as well.
We can, but dream.
Exactly. Should have brought something else back from Macau. So, all right, better get back to those expenses. But, guys, thank you very much for your company this week, and we'll be back next week.